16. Going mobile. There had been a smell in the weeks after, like hot oven cleaner, catching at the back of the throat. Had it ever gone entirely away? She concentrates on her breakfast, eggs poached to perfection and toast sliced from a loaf of slightly alien dimensions. The two slices of bacon are crisp and very flat, as though they've been ironed. High-end Japanese hotels interpret Western breakfasts the way the Rixson's makers interpret the MA1. She pauses, fork halfway from plate, looking toward the closet where she'd hung her jacket the night before. Blue Ant Tokyo has been charged with helping her in any way it can. When she's finished eating, cleaning her plate with the final corner of the last slice of toast, she pours a second cup of coffee and looks up the local Blue Ant number on her laptop. She dials it on her cell and hears someone say, "Mushi mushi," which makes her smile. She asks for Jennifer Brossard and tells her, no preface other than hello, that she needs a black MA1 flying jacket reproduction by Buzz Rixson's in the Japanese equivalent of an American men's size 38. Anything else? They're impossible to find. People order them a year in advance. Is that all you need? Yes, thanks. Shall we send it to the hotel? Yes, thank you. Bye then. Jennifer Brossard clicks off. Case hits end and stares briefly out at blue sky and oddly shaped towers. Her requests don't have to make any sense, she gathers, which is interesting. When the psychosomatic oven cleaner starts to stage a comeback, it's time to do more things, preferably purposeful things, to unremember. She showers, dresses, emails Parker Boy. Mushi mushi. I hope you've gotten Judy out of that elastic bandage. She makes a great keiko. I'll have that printed out and personally inscribed, and after that it's up to you. Got a laptop that goes cellular, though I haven't figured how to do that yet. But I'm taking it with me today, and I will. I'll be checking my mail, and here's the number of my cell here if you need to go to voice. She checks the number of her phone and types it in. All I can do now is wait for you to hook me up with Taki. She's spoken with Parker Boy twice before, and both times it's been odd. In the way that initial telephone conversations with people you've gotten to know well on the net, yet have never met, are odd. She considers opening the latest from her mother, but decides it might be too much after that waking reverie. It often is. Downstairs in the business center, an exquisite girl in something like the Miyake version of an office lady uniform inkjets the Keiko image on a stiff sheet of super glossy 8.5 by 11. The image embarrasses Case, but the pretty OL exhibits no reaction at all. Emboldened, Case has her print out Daryl's kanji as well, requests a thick black marker, and asks the girl to copy it, inscribing the photograph for her. We need it for a shoot, she lies by way of explanation, unnecessarily because the girl considers whatever it says there, calmly judges the available space on the photo, and executes a very lively-looking version, complete with exclamation marks. Then she pauses, the marker still poised. Yes? Case asks. Pardon me, but would be good with happy face? Please. The girl quickly adds a happy face, caps the marker, hands the photograph to Case with both hands, and bows. Thank you very much. You are welcome. Bowing again. Walking past the bamboo grove in the sky-high lobby, she catches a glimpse of her hair in a mirrored wall. Speed dials Jennifer Brossard. It's Case. I need my hair cut. When? Now. Got a pen? 20 minutes later, in Shibuya, she's settling into a hot rocks massage that she hasn't asked for, in a toilet room on the 15th floor of a cylindrical building that vaguely resembles part of a Wurlitzer jukebox. None of these women speak English, but she's decided just to go with the program, whatever it is, and count on getting her hair cut at some point in the process. Which she does, in great and alien luxury, for the better part of 4 hours, though it proves to involve a kelp wrap, a deep facial, manifold tweezings and pluckings, a manicure, a pedicure, lower leg wax, and close-call avoidance of a bikini job. When she tries to pay with the Blue Ant card, they giggle and wave it away. She tries again, and one of them points to the card's Blue Ant logo. Either Blue Ant has an account, she decides, or they do Blue Ant's models, and this is a freebie. Walking back out into Shibuya sunlight, she feels simultaneously lighter and less intelligent, as though she's left more than a few brain cells back there with the other scruff. She's wearing more makeup than she'd usually apply in a month, but it's been brushed on by Zen-com professionals, swaying to some kind of Japanese Enya equivalent. The first mirror she sees herself in stops her. Her hair, she has to admit, is really something, some paradoxical state between sleek and tousled. Anime hair, rendered high-res. The rest of the image isn't working, though. The standard CPUs can't stand up to this sushi chef level of cosmetic presentation. She opens and closes her mouth, afraid to lick her lips. She has their repair kit in with the laptop, probably hundreds of dollars worth of that other kind of Mac product, but she knows she'll never get it on again like this. But there, just down the block, is one or another branch of Parco, any of which houses enough micro-boutiques to make Fred Siegel on Melrose look like an outlet store in Montana. Less than an hour later, she emerges from Parco wearing the tape-patched Rixons, a black knit skirt, black cotton sweater, black Vogel tights that she suspects cost half a month's rent on her place in New York, and a black pair of obscurely retro French suede boots that definitely did. She has the CPUs she was wearing folded into a big Parco carrier bag, and the laptop in a graphite-colored hip-hugging piece of ergonomic body luggage, with a single wide strap that passes diagonally between her breasts and lends the sweater a little help that way. Conversion to CPU status has been conferred with the aid of a seam ripper from the Notions section of a branch of Muji, located on the 8th floor, leaving all the labels behind, all but the very small label on the hip bag, which simply says, luggage label. She might even be able to live with that. She'll have to see. All of this on Bijan's card. She's not sure how she feels about that, but she supposes she'll find out. There's a coffee place directly across the street, a two-story Starbucks clone in which everyone seems to be chain-smoking. She buys a glass of iced tea, blinks at tiny individual containers of liquid sugar and lemon juice. Why didn't we think of that? And makes her way to the second floor where fewer people are smoking. She settles at a Scandinavian-looking counter of pale wood that runs the length of a window overlooking the street and the entrance to Parco, and unpacks the laptop, phone, and manuals. She's not one of those people who won't ever read the manual, although she'll skip it if she can. 10 minutes of concerted attention has FFF on the screen, wireless fully affected, so she sweetens her lemon tea and checks out the action. She knows this stage after a new segment turns up. Everyone's had a chance to view it repeatedly and brainstorm, and now the more personal, more deeply felt interpretations are emerging. She looks down into the street where odd-sized vehicles break the flow of spotless but otherwise non-foreign-looking cars, so many cars everywhere being Japanese, and sees a silver scooter go past, its driver wearing a matching silver helmet with a mirrored visor, and what she recognizes as an M-1951 U.S. Army fishtail parka, an embroidered red, white, and blue RAF roundel on its back like a target. Flashing back to that morning in Soho, the window of the mod shop, before her Blue Ant meeting. It's somehow her nature, she thinks, to pick out this one detail, this errant meme, a British military symbol repurposed by post-war style warriors and recontextualized again here via cross-cultural echo. But the writer has it right. The 51 fishtail is the one. She checks her email. Parka boy. I hear, O Mistress Muji. This startles her, just having been there. But then she remembers that Parka boy knows she likes Muji because nothing there ever has a logo. She's told him about the logo problem. Where are you exactly? Near as I can make out, Taki's day job is in Shinjuku. He proposes to meet you in Roppongi, early evening. I've told him you are going to convey Keiko's regards and give him something she's sent specially for him. You are a teacher, though not one of hers, a recent friend, and have been helping her with her English. And, of course, a footage head, which he knows, as Keiko is a footage head, too. Keiko has implied that you're getting the number could, in some unspecified way, help her academically. He knows you don't speak Japanese, but claims to have enough English for an encounter of this sort. Woo. I say woo because we have been working very hard, Daryl and I being Keiko. I think we have gotten it across that he really should give you that number if he wants to encourage further interaction with her. I'm assuming you will be up for that, even though they're on biz. But keep that cell on. I'll call you as soon as we have a time and place and email a map that Taki says he's going to email Keiko. She shuts down, closes the laptop, unhooks the phone, and repacks everything. The smoke is getting to her. She looks around. Every man there has obviously been staring, but immediately looks down or away. She takes a last sip of sweet iced tea and swings down off the stool, velcroing the luggage label back across her shoulder, picking up the Parco bag, and hitting the stairs to the street. Soldelay plays tricks with subjective time, expanding or telescoping it at seeming random. That big beauty brain session in Shibuya, all that making her fanny fabulous, and the shopping in Parco after it, had seemed to take the full 5 hours it had taken. But the rest, drifting from one personal landmark to the next, by cab and on foot, seemed now, in the Hello Kitty section of Kittyland, to have collapsed into a single moment of undifferentiated Japanese stuff. And why, she wonders, gazing blankly at more Hello Kitty regalia than seems possible, do Japanese franchises like Hello Kitty not trigger interior landslide, panic attack, the need to invoke the duck in the face? She doesn't know. It just doesn't. No more than does Kogepan, the clueless-looking homunculus, whose name, she vaguely recalls, means burnt toast. The Kogepan goods are arrayed beyond Hello Kitty, a franchise that has never quite found Hello Kitty's global legs. One can buy Kogepan purses, fridge magnets, pens, lighters, hairbrushes, staplers, pencil boxes, knapsacks, watches, figurines. Beyond Kogepan lies the franchise of that depressive-looking boneless panda and her cubs. And none of this stuff, purest no-content marketing, triggers Case in the least. But something is making a strange and annoying sound, even above the low-level electronic uproar of Kittyland, and eventually she realizes that it's her phone. Hello? Case? Parkaboy. He sounds quite unlike he sounds on the screen, whatever that means. Older? Different. How are you? Still awake, he says. What time is it there? What day, you mean? He corrects her. I'd rather not tell you. I might start to cry. But never mind, you're on. He wants to meet you in a bar in Roppongi. I think it's a bar. Says there's no name in English, just red lanterns. Anomiya. This guy's got me feeling like I live there, and I'm tired of it already. Daryl and I, we're like those Mars rover jockeys, virtual jet lag. Tokyo time, and we're trying to hold down paying jobs in two different time zones back here. So Taki sent Keiko a map, right? And I've sent it to you, and he says 6:30. Will I recognize him? What we've seen of him, he's not Ryuichi Sakamoto. Mind you, that's not what Keiko thinks. She's practically told him she'll fork over the booty as soon as she gets home. She winces. This aspect of what she's up to here makes her extremely uncomfortable. But he'll give me the number? I think so. If he doesn't, no pick of Keiko. She told him that? She likes this part of it even less. No, of course not. That's a love offering, something to hold him till she gets the booty back to Tokyo. But you've got to get that number. Make it clear. How? Play it by ear. Thanks. You want to get to the bottom of this little footage thing, don't you? You're implacable. So are you. It's why we get along. I'm going to eat this whole bag of chocolate-covered espresso beans now and sit here grinding my teeth flat until I hear from you. He hangs up. She stares back at all those eyes. Hello Kitty and Kogepan and the boneless pandas.